Hello, Tom Myers here. If you're like me and you've got a lot to say, a lot of stories to share, a lot of opinions to give, then listen up. I'm going to talk about something that's going to take your passion for podcasts to the next level. I'm talking about the 7 Million Bikes podcast course. This is the podcasting course you need. Imagine having the skills, the knowledge, and the confidence to create, produce, and grow a successful podcast. And you're not doing it alone. I'm talking about Neil Mackay, the podcast guy, founder of 7 Million Bikes Podcasts. He knows what it takes to turn your passion into a podcast that stands out. He's going to guide you through everything from podcast ideas that resonate to nailing that audio production and even editing your episodes like a pro. With 23 tutorials and over 3 hours of video content, this course is packed with practical tips, real-world examples, and everything you need to know to get started. Just $97 for a wealth of knowledge that'll set you up for podcasting success? It's a no-brainer. Think about it. Less than $100 to unleash your creativity, share your story, and potentially even turn your passion into a profitable business. People like Ian Payton, who's taken the course, launched their own podcast, and already in the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. And you could be next. The 7 Million Bikes podcast course is your ticket to podcasting greatness. Go to the link in my show notes right now and let's make your podcasting dream a reality.
Hi, I'm Aaron, the owner and producer of Oddly Funny Productions. That's Awdly Funny Productions. Bombing Run, the original comedy combat game show. It's an hour's worth of comedians clashing with their jokes. And soon to be released, Orb's Wacky World, a talk show with a twist. It'll be a mix of comedy, unusual questions, and music with Orb as the host. Oddly Funny Productions. We might be odd, but we bring the funny to you. That's Awdly Funny Productions.
Hey everyone, it's me again. If you're tired of listening to this show with all these ads in the way, go ahead and subscribe to my Patreon. In addition to listening to this show without the ads, you also get extended versions of these episodes and bonus clips as well. Doesn't cost that much. You can get plans for as low as $1 a month. You can show the love and your support. Just go to patreon.com/TomMyers, spelled M-Y-E-R-S, and subscribe and listen and enjoy today. Again, that's patreon.com/TomMyers.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, and welcome to Tom Myers versus the rest of the world. A lot's happening this week. Donald Trump's criminal trial started on Monday. He fell asleep during the first moments of the first day of the trial. I can see how that would happen. If he and people like him don't get enough racism, xenophobia, and demonization of women in a particular form, they would find it boring enough to doze off as well. To be fair, that's the exact reason why the number of incels who used to listen to the show has greatly decreased since the first episode. It's gotten so bad. Donald Trump is basically like an old blanket that your child hangs on to that will never get clean no matter how many times you wash it. So you sneak it away when your child isn't looking and you just burn the fucking thing. Donald Trump is the toy that keeps dying no matter how many fresh batteries you put into it. You have to get rid of it and just rationalize to yourself, he'll cry for a little bit and forget about the damn thing in a week, week and a half, tops. And with Jeff having the week off, this is the best legal analysis you're going to get this whole episode. So I hope you enjoy it. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that he won't run to be the Libertarian Party candidate for president. It says something when a fringe political party who is willing to take anybody hears you don't want to run for president on their ticket and is relieved. A staffer for Kennedy's New York campaign office was fired. Apparently, she misidentified herself as the state's campaign chair when she wasn't. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. firing someone for cause and misrepresentation just doesn't make sense. It's a bit like Harvey Weinstein firing someone for sexual assault. And of course, you knew I had to cover this particular story in this opening monologue. O.J. Simpson died. Say what you will about O.J. and his reputation, but he is going to get one hell of a police escort for his funeral. I find it interesting that of all the things that O.J. Simpson did, he never took steroids. Like, that would be the nicest thing for him to have done. He was never caught up in taking any illicit substances, which is quite ironic considering his nickname was the Juice. That's the cleanest joke you're going to hear this whole episode. I hope his caretakers were fans of his old Hertz rental car commercials, and in his last moments, they all shouted, "Go, OJ, go." Enough, and on that note, on with the show. Please join me in welcoming Gina Brown, Polite Kitty, and Valerie Pascal.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tom. Ooh,
hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Hello.
So how's everyone doing this week?
Pretty good. I'm probably the only one of the generation here. I still say we're going to OJ through something. Like, if we're running, we OJ through the airport or whatever. And I have to catch myself because it's just how we were. That's how Gen Xers do. We OJ through things because we're running, and that's just, we remember those commercials.
I mean, us millennials have that curse where we used to say, you know, we just, you know, we have it where we have a great time. You know, we're doing everything. We're just Pee Wee Hermaning everything, and right. which just means now we have to. Now we have to stay out of theaters. You know, I mean, Lauren Boebert and I are in the same age bracket. So that's how.
Aww.
It makes so much sense now.
And are you both single and available?
I think she dates Dems, right?
Probably.
I would not want to put her through that torture. All right. Even I have some mercy. This episode looks at another instance where a group of people look at the end result of their efforts and say, well, this shit didn't go as according to plan. When the Dobbs decision by the United States Supreme Court overturned nearly 50 years of precedent by nullifying the Roe versus Wade decision, the victory lap taken by Republicans and conservatives, thankfully, couldn't be stopped fast enough. Ballot measure after ballot measure showed the vast majority of the American people weren't in favor of the court's ruling and all for codifying abortion rights into their own local jurisdictions. Yes, once again, most of the American people disagree with Republicans. The panel right now is looking at my shocked face, and you, the listener, and you, the listener, are listening to my sarcasm voice. The irony is that the Dobbs case came from Mississippi, and now Arizona's abortion laws were written into law in 1864. Basically, the Civil War was there to remind us that we could have let some of these states, like Mississippi, go. But no. We had to unify two diametrically opposed groups of people together. Unifying the person who bitches about receiving almond milk when he wanted oat milk in his latte with the type of person who is all too happy to lick the Huddle House grill clean while it's still turned on. Joining us tonight to discuss this topic, please welcome Laurel Kathleen.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Laurel, welcome to the show. So your thoughts on everything that's been going on, like the fight against the fight against Republicans trying to stop access to what's basically basic needs and services.
I think it's crazy and terrifying. I'm originally from Texas, and a lot of my friends back there who are still, you know, thinking about having kids or anything in that area are really freaked out because a lot of them are in their 30s and older, and they're just so worried about where this is headed. And some friends in Arizona, the same thing. Like, why are we looking to these pre-Civil War laws? That's insane. And it just is very terrifying because I obviously grew up when Roe v. Wade was the standard, and everybody kind of relaxed and was like, okay, this is where we need to head. This is great. This is never going to change. And seeing that change has been just so shocking and awful. And it really worries me about where we're headed, because it just seems like such a way to control women's bodies and their livelihoods and the way that they have current control over their own lives. It's insane. Why are we trying to control 50% of the population when it's actually not just about women's rights and women's health rights? It also helps men as well. So I don't really understand this focus on the abortion laws, except for it seems like yet another part of the evangelical Christians having a stranglehold over what normal everyday Americans don't really want. So we have this tiny little percentage of evangelical Christians coming in and supporting these laws and pushing for them and making people a single issue voter, which we've already done that. We've moved past that as a country and as a world. We've all seen that women's rights and abortion rights, they help everybody. So why are we trying to remove those except to control a large swath of the population and prevent people from making good choices that could not only save their lives, but prevent them from ruining another small life for a child they can't take care of? And then these children, there was an amazing book that came out called Freakonomics, where they studied the effects of Roe v. Wade and saw, why was there a dip in crime in the 1990s? Well, because the children who were growing up to be criminals simply were not being born. So we actually had a dip in crime due to Roe v. Wade. I'm worried about seeing the other side of that and all of these children being born who aren't warranted. What's going to happen?
So, and a dip in crime also, when you consider that the procedure that was criminalized before Roe v. Wade was passed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that in and of itself, it's a self-fulfilling, it fulfills its own purpose, basically.
Yeah. It's not just, they're not banning abortion there, as everybody has seen. It's just going underground. It's becoming more harmful. It's becoming incredibly terrifying. I don't know where we're headed other than to see more and more women having to drive out of state, being penalized and being arrested for seeking care that it should be a national right. So I think it's awful. I'm appalled by it. And I just don't know what we can do other than continue to vote, continue to protest, etc.
If you listen to the media narrative, one does not expect a state like Kansas to have a battle over abortion come to a crescendo with a progressive victory. However, the access to abortion ballot measures in states like Kansas, Ohio, and Kentucky are proving that conventional wisdom and the media, once again, are wrong. And it's the voters calling the shots despite being told the opposite. In this clip, MSNBC's Steve Kornacki breaks down the early election night figures in Kansas on the network's election night coverage.
Steve Kornacki, you're at the big board. It's just, you know, there's so many nuggets that we could go through, but I think that tells you everything you need to know about turnout, that the no vote right now already has more votes than everybody who showed up to the polls in 2014 in the state of Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it in some perspective, I guess our decision desk right now, at least, thinks that the turnout is going to end up at about 875,000. You know, that's a rough number here. That's subject to change, but I can tell you the estimate has been going up and up all night. So 875,000, a couple ways to put that in perspective. You mentioned 2014. In 2018 in the primary, it was 468,000. You had competitive primaries in both parties in 2018. In the 2016 presidential election, the general election in Kansas, it was 1.2 million, a little bit under 1.2 million. It was just over 1 million in the 2012 presidential election. So yeah, this is staggering turnout. And again, we're saying now we think 875,000. It's not impossible that number could get revised even higher, because that has been what's been happening all night as these votes have come in. It's just vastly, vastly exceeded what was expected in terms of the turnout. So, yeah, I mean, this was, I heard Dasha just talking about that, you know, Democrats in the wake of that Supreme Court ruling were saying this was something that was going to energize and mobilize voters particularly in suburbs, particularly, this is the one I've been watching all night. See, this is the one I've been watching all night, Johnson County. You're absolutely seeing that just in terms of the level of turnout, the level of opposition here. Just look at the political story, by the way, of Johnson County. This is a quarter of the state. A quarter of the vote comes out of here. It votes for Mitt Romney by almost 20 points in 2012. It's competitive, but for Trump in 16. Turns toward Biden by 9 in 2020. Now, on this referendum, nearly 70% voting no on this referendum. And what Democrats say is there's a lot of big suburban counties in key swing states like Pennsylvania and Georgia and Arizona that have taken this kind of journey over the last decade and that would have this same response to that Supreme Court ruling.
I just criticized the media narrative a little bit ago for this, but, you know, I too am surprised at the margin, but not surprised at just the number of people who are saying, all right, you know what? Trying to cut off services like this, this is stupid. This is dumb.
I find it very interesting that it sort of proves that there are people out there who are issue people, right? And they do vote on issues when they have the opportunity. And It's unfortunate that the way our voting is that we can't just walk up and issue vote, right? We take this one person and they have to represent a number of issues, some of which we believe in, some of which we don't, but it's kind of like, well, I guess 75% is good, so I'll just do this, right? Because issue by issue, that just proves that there are people out there that, because Kansas is a red state, so we kind of know where they're going to lean, but they were very strong on this one issue. It's really, I like it. I find it refreshing, but also a little unsatisfying.
I love it because the younger generation is coming up. You know, I've always said Gen Z
Gen
Z and Gen Alpha are very feisty generations, and they'll, you know, they want their rights.
They do. I've got a Z right over here sitting next to me. And I agree. There's a story for us in the fall from Kansas based on this one issue, but you know, we'll see.
It was interesting to look at that map because it's not like, oh, here are clearly the cities where there's a concentration of people. It was well all over the map on that state.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha, which I'm very excited by. I think that's very exciting, but I think it's also people in Gen X and the baby boomer generations that are seeing this reversal and being like, oh, hell no, we're not doing this again. And they're not just voting to reinstate their own rights, but their daughters, their granddaughters.
For our daughters, because some of us.
Yeah.
We don't really need to worry about abortion anymore. No.
How exciting to see people actually voting for the future and not just what benefits them now, or rather what doesn't benefit them but doesn't really help them or hurt them. So they're like, well, I don't care. That's not an issue that really, you know, affects me at all. If you're older or if you're not going to have children, etc. The fact that so many women and so many people are stepping up and being like, okay, we've gone through this, we're not, this isn't happening again, is so exciting. And I think that's really been the push. The only silver lining to this decision is that it's galvanizing people to go to the polls and try to stop it from happening, at least locally, which is very, very exciting and cool.
After years of conservatives telling us that abortion isn't evil and most of the country wants an end to, quote, killing babies, end quote, they finally got their wish with the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, overturning the nearly 50 years of the protections provided by Roe v. Wade. In another classic moment of how it started versus how it's going, we can see the evolution of conservative and Republican talking points from the moment the Supreme Court decision broke to the moments various states set their own protections to women's health into law.
The kind of angry leftists, many of whom are pretty ignorant and don't even know what overturning Roe means, I think a month afterwards they're going to be surprised. Wait, nothing about my life changed.
There's a narrative forming in America that the Republican Party and the pro-life movement is on the run. No, 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 no. We're going nowhere.
My guess is, in terms of the impact on federal races, I think it's probably going to be a wash.
Democrats are trying to scare women into thinking Republicans don't want abortion legal under any circumstances.
No abortion ban. I mean, I think that that's what the voters said.
We've seen it in polling for a long time. When we looked at the midterm elections last year, we said instead of a red wave, we saw a red ripple. In large part, I think that was because of abortion.
These results, though, do underscore the potency of the abortion rights issue. If the Democrats could run abortion rights against Trump in 2024, they'd probably do very well indeed.
It does seem like the Republican Party generally has a real problem with winning.
The reality here, Trump delivers MAGA. MAGA delivers victories. This was a turnout issue about MAGA. Don't come here this morning and start whining about abortion. Stand up and do your job. Get in the trenches and fight.
Now, what do most of those speakers have in common? I can't quite put my finger on it.
White men, white, so many white. It was all so white and bright and male.
And angry and
old, rich.
You can't white put your finger on it, Gina.
I couldn't. Just so much. I do like that the one person brought up the pro-life, because it's not about life. Because if you were so supportive of life, this would not be the issue, right? You only care about something when it's a fetus. You don't care as soon as that baby comes out. You don't give a damn about its life. So it is not pro-life. So I always... They hadn't been saying it for so long, and then now this guy said it, and I was like, oh, wow, he really did. They are saying pro-life again. So, and it's,
it's pro-life towards a life that isn't even born yet, but nothing is said about the mother's life. Not a thing.
Right.
They're not pro-life. They're anti-woman. And frankly, it's sad that that's even become the branding, because, of course, an insane person would say, I'm not pro-life. You sound crazy. They've done such a good job of branding it as something you couldn't possibly help but agree with.
Right, exactly. Right.
Well, it's not even just the white thing that bothers me. It's also the rich thing, where it's like all these people are multi-millionaires who, if they had a daughter or let's say a mistress who suddenly was pregnant, they would stop at no expense to make sure that that was taken care of, because they have the ability to do so. How many women's lives are going to be ruined because they financially can't drive to another state or drive to another country or fly or whatever? They are so far removed from what regular everyday American women go through, not just people who aren't just white, poor, white, rich, and old.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the demographic that they're speaking to and trying to rile people up and be like, they're coming for our rights, et cetera. It's like, not y'all's rights, the younger people. Like, what are we even doing here?
And I thought one of them said, like, the Dems just think that they want to take away all of the abortion rights, and we would do better to know that it wasn't real. But it is. There are so many that in cases of rape and incest and whatever, they're like, well, you just have to kind of carry it to term, you know? And in cases where the mother is... her life is at risk still, they're like, no. I think your former state, I think Texas had some chatter about it, right? So I don't know. I mean, I will say that somehow or another, Kansas gives me hope. I use it loosely. I'd probably need to see more states, but I will how they are voting. But at least whatever chatter is out there, it's not changing the minds of most of the people. Most of Americans are like, nah, leave it alone. We don't want to change it. So a little bit.
Right, because this goes back to the, you know, they're just going to want to take away your rights. And then and it's really just it's a game of, this is about abortion, and this is coming from the resident therapist on the panel. It's not about abortion per se. It's about how much can they take away little by little at once to be left with only the white rich men in power.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, agree. It's power. You're right. It's power. We've seen it when the subject matter is not abortion, even when you're standing in line to vote and you can no longer give somebody a bottle of water. You're right. It's like little by little, let's just take away their rights. You're so right, Polite.
With the Alabama Supreme Court banning the use of in vitro fertilization in the state, it is a clear demonstration that while Alabama may be first in terms of alphabetical order of all the states, it is last in common sense and knowing how anything fucking works. Symbolizing this is the state's senior senator, Tommy Tuberville, who, in a moment where you begin to think that he encourages coaching football with no helmets, sums up his thoughts on the effects of the court's ruling in this clip.
Do you have a reaction to the Alabama Supreme Court ruling on the fact that embryos are children?
Yeah, I was all for it. We need to have more kids. We need to have an opportunity to do that. And I thought this was the right thing to do. But
IVF is used to have more children. And right now, IVF services are paused at some of the clinics in Alabama. Aren't you concerned that this could impact people who are trying to have kids?
Well, that's for another conversation. People need to have that. We need more kids. We need the people to have the opportunity to have kids.
Senator, what do you say to the women right now in Alabama who no longer have access to IVF, who will not, as a result of this ruling? What do you say to them?
Well, that's a hard one. It really is. It's really hard. Because, again, you want people to have that opportunity. And that's what I was telling her. We need more kids.
I mean, to me, Tommy Tuberville sounds like if you took like a six-year-old and asked them to write a paper about the pro-life position. They want to have more kids. We need to have more kids. I mean, that's their mentality.
I don't think he understood. I feel like he was having a moment.
You're right, Gina.
Like, I feel like he was so confused, and like she tried to restate the question, and I feel like he just wasn't all there. It was uncomfortable for me to watch. I was like, oh, is he having a health event?
This is why
he's like my mama.
Age limits. This is why. Why are we asking an old man what he thinks about for couples trying to do IVF? It feels like they've painted themselves into a corner with the whole pro-life movement. What I want to know is, why are you wanting more kids? You want more people for your base, and you want more people, women, who are tasked with taking care of children who don't have time to vote against you. I think that's the main thing. They want to keep women having kids, supporting their base, and continuing to have very little personal power and very little choice.
Yeah. Aww.
Well, I mean, this is almost eugenics, right? Because really what they're saying is, we don't want, again, that certain color. We don't want certain ethnicities, and we don't want disabled people. So if there's anything wrong with those, you know, then good. We want natural born children or whatever, you know. And again, that just goes back to they have to be perfect, or they have to be perfect under your eyes than somebody else.
I do feel like there was a moment, though, in that video where he realized he had painted himself into a corner and kind of like kombucha girled it. Like, oh, no, no. Huh?
He's realizing it in real time.
Right.
You might have messed up.
Oh, I done said the wrong word. These people talks differently the way they do in Alabama. When they ask me, how did you feel about winning that game? It felt good. And I want more babies to come to my game. I need more kids to play football. And on that note, that's our show. I want to thank Gina Brown, Polite Kitty, Valerie Pascal, and Laurel Kathleen.
Thank you, Tom.
But before we go, my final thought. Welcome to the fourth installment of our series, Are You Better Off Now Than 4 Years Ago? If you're already sick of listening to me and you want to stop this episode now, I'll cut right to the chase and tell you the answer is yes. 4 years ago today, April 18th, the United States death toll from COVID-19 exceeded 31,000 deaths, which 2 days earlier was the highest death toll of anywhere in the world. New York, the then epicenter of the pandemic in this country, reported 540 deaths and over 2,000 hospital admissions in the previous 24 hours. This was after then-President Trump had said the number of cases would go from 15 to zero. Meanwhile, mask mandates were going into effect in several states, including my home state of Maryland. People were already getting restless from staying home and were looking to defy health guidelines by going to jurisdictions, Florida, with no COVID restrictions, thus exponentially spreading the virus farther than any science fiction movie writer could imagine. In what was considered the first of many low points in the pandemic, people who always wanted to do stand-up comedy but never had the means to do so learned they could finally do it virtually from the comfort of their own home. Thus, the means to do this podcast was created. See, if you fans of Joe Rogan, Alex Jones, and their ilk wanted to keep people like me from doing a podcast, all you had to do was just stay inside and keep quiet for 2 weeks. That's it. But no, you couldn't do it. So I'm still here, you fuckers. On the jobs front, the increase of state and local health guidelines and restrictions and the increase in Americans getting sick meant the unemployment rate would continue to increase onward towards a record unemployment comparable to the Great Depression. On the energy and gas prices front, there was some silver lining. 2 days from today, 4 years ago, April 20th, 2020, oil prices did something unprecedented. They fell to below zero, sending the price of a barrel of crude to minus $40 a barrel, thus dropping gas prices to a record low, according to the website Gas Buddy. While appealing enough to some people to kick Biden out of office and get Trump back in, one should remember that at the time, less fuel was being consumed because nobody was going anywhere because, remember this? We were just going under lockdown for a contagious and severe respiratory virus. In short, are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? Again, some of you need to be reminded of this. The answer is yes. Good night. This episode was written and hosted by Tom Myers with panelists Gina Brown, Polite Kitty, Valerie Pascal, and guest Laurel Kathleen. Theme music composed and arranged by Jeroen Vandenhurik. Executive producers Tom Myers, Matt Connerton for IPM Nation, and Eddie Carson for Odyssey Radio. Please leave a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to the Patreon for ad-free episodes, extended episodes, and bonus clips. Thank you for listening, and please visit tommyers.us. Hey everyone, thanks for listening. If you want to listen to more of this episode, go ahead and subscribe to my Patreon. There you can get extended versions of episodes like this one, as well as bonus clips. You can even listen to regular episodes without all these pesky little ads through which you have to fast forward. Doesn't really cost that much. Plans as low as $1 a month. Go to patreon.com/TomMyers, spelled M-Y-E-R-S. Show the love, subscribe, show your support today. That's patreon.com/TomMyers.
Hi everyone. I'm Orb. I am not the official spokesperson for Oddly Funny Productions. That's A-W-D-L-Y, Funny Productions. Aaron is tied up right now. Shut up, I'll untie you in a minute. Here at Oddly, we're producing some great shows. Bombing Run, where comedians compete to see who's Joker Ace. And Orb's Wacky World, a talk show with a mix of comedy, uncomfortable questions, and music, hosted by yours truly. When you think of comedy, think of Oddly Funny Productions. That's A-W-D-L-Y, Funny Productions. Now, how do I get out of here?
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.